This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the Trackhouse Multimedia Studios just southwest of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everyone. I'm Jeremy Scott. We have a huge show for you today. Couple of hot shoes in the world of open wheel racing will be joining us here in just a little bit. We'll start things off with Daniel Frost. Now, he had a great weekend at Road America this past weekend, and if you haven't been following the road to Indy, you might want to, because there's a lot of great, not only is there a lot of great talent, but a lot of great races. They had two races each. Indy Pro 2000 and USF 2000 had two races on Friday, and two races on Friday, and it was their season opener, and they've got a lot more races coming down the line. Daniel Frost also races for Andretti Autosport in FR Americas, so we'll touch on that a little bit. Following up with that is Simon Sykes, winner of the first four out of 1600 races in the F1600 Championship for Formula Race Promotions. He's going into another hot weekend at Virginia International Raceway. Also, driver analyst Charlie Ante joins me. We'll talk about the weekend that was in racing. We'll preview the two tracks that most of our open wheel series will be racing at, and talk about a couple other things as well. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Inside Open Wheel, Facebook Inside Open Wheel, and any questions you have, make sure to email us at insideopenwheel@gmail.com. Also, you can leave us a voicemail. We'll play those probably throughout the year if we get a good one. 815-714-9260 is the number to leave us a voicemail. Before we get into recapping everything which will happen later on the show, we did have something that came across our desk just after the release of our last episode. Sunoco has announced that they are going to be the official fuel of FR Americas and the F4 US Championship. And of course, as you know, a lot of racing series use Sunoco race fuels. Both series cars are powered by equally strong, reliable HPD modified versions of the current Honda Civic Type R engine, with the FR Americas powered by a turbocharged 303 horsepower using 100 octane Sunoco fuel. And here's what's interesting about this deal. F4 US uses a normally aspirated 160 bhp engine with 93 octane Sunoco fuel that can be purchased at all Sunoco fueling stations. So not only can they get the fuel on their way to the track, but you can get it at the track that's for F4 US only. And of course, several tracks along the F4 US and FR America schedule feature Sunoco, including Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course, Virginia International Raceway, Sebring, Homestead, Miami, and Circuit of the Americas. But it's a question mark if the US Grand Prix will be there. We'll have a special report if the US Grand Prix does get canceled, but it unfortunately sounds like that may not happen. Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, sit down and talk with Daniel Frost, the T3 Motorsports driver who really starting to set the Indy Pro 2000 world on fire. The wait is over. Inside Open Wheel is now on Apple Podcasts. So no matter where you get your favorite podcast from, you can always get a new episode of Inside Open Wheel on that same program. Heck, you can even get a push notification right when we release new episodes. Once again, Inside Open Wheel, we're now on Apple Podcasts.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Coming up a little bit later on in our show, Charlie Ante, driver analyst, joins us. We'll talk about this past weekend in racing and this upcoming weekend in racing. Joining us right now, he had a really good weekend, two podiums, one of them being a win in the number 68 Denjet Tatis for Turn 3 Motorsport in Indy Pro 2000. He's the points leader as well. He's Daniel Frost. Daniel, thanks for joining us. Pretty wild weekend, to say the least.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it was a wild one, I'd say.
And it's interesting, too, because I can't remember back-to-back races in one day, let alone the start of a season in any of the Road to Indy series. But let's first talk about how that car felt coming off the truck. You had a couple of test sessions, a practice session. I think was that practice session tied into a qualifying session? I can't remember.
It was a three test sessions, okay. One practice, and then straight into qualifying.
Oh, that's brutal. That is absolutely right. Brutal. But, you know, the good news is you guys were quick off the truck, but what exactly happened? Because you qualified first, but you didn't necessarily start there.
Yeah, for pretty much the whole weekend, we were pretty much up front. In testing, we were P1 overall, and then in practice, we were P1. And then coming to qualifying, we were P1 as well. But then due to some technical infraction where the sixth gear was not the right gear for that specific track, we were sent to the back of the field. So that means my pole position time would have been taken off.
Oh, in a track like Road America, you've got to be up near the front, especially because you just don't know what's going to happen there because you got a long straight, and then you hit that hard right-hander there at the top of the straightaway, and we saw that in the IndyCar race too.
Exactly. Starting from the back is never a good starting point, and obviously that puts us quite far back in how we were going to approach that weekend. But I think that just coming there with the right mindset, I think, was the key to taking all that bad luck away.
Yeah, and even if you didn't start at the front, you still made your way up to fourth by lap two. 14 turns, a lot of opportunities for passing, especially with cars bunched up with each other, but that's a hell of a monumental start, really.
Honestly, I think there was a little bit of luck there, but I think that with the right car placement, it was pretty a perfect way to start that opening lap of that race. I think that with the way we managed to set the car up and to be so aggressive at the start to make all the positions was the key to really be able to fight for that win at the very, very final lap.
Yeah, in that final lap, you had your battle with Devlin DeFrancesco there in the last lap shootout. Let's go ahead and talk about that, those final 4 miles in that first race.
Yeah, right. So coming into that lap, I would think I was about 2 seconds behind him. And I honestly didn't know how I was going to be able to catch him. But, you know, it's racing and you just got to keep pushing and see that till the very final part of the line, that's where you stop and you give up, or well, you keep pushing obviously, but until you get to that point, that's when you got to keep focused and try to see what you can maximize out of the car. And throughout that lap, I was catching him, and the time started going down. I think he made a slight mistake at the first corner, which really gained my momentum and to catch him even more. And coming further down to that very final lap where we're coming down to Canada corner, which is turn 9 of the racetrack, I was really putting him pressure and I was getting right to his bumper, following him, attacking him, trying to get past him, but he defended it. And we were coming to the very last corner and we were still side by side, and I kind of set it up the corner where he'd be really tight on the inside of the corner and I'd be on the outside to get a good run. So at that point, I had a perfect drag race to the very end because I had the car set it up better than him. And with that little drag quicker than him until the very last line, I managed to outdrag him to the very final straight line, and I passed him by 0.05 of a second, which is, I think, one of the closest finish I've ever had in my history of racing.
And that's also one of the closest finishes in IndyCar has sanctioning history too, which helps out. And that stretch from 14 all the way to the finish line there, you're trying to get that front nose out there. That had to have been much longer than what you're used to. You're probably thinking, okay, is this lap going to end? Is it going to end? Why is this finish line seem so much further away?
Yeah, exactly. The track was just, you know, like a little bit further away, and I was just trying to keep pushing and see if I could get any closer to him. And thankfully, the track was slightly long enough for my car to outdrag him to the line. And I'm super, super happy of the result that we were able to even achieve from dead last.
And race two, you podium, but in the press release, you said that you lost a spot due to a mistake. What exactly happened there?
So we had the lead initially, and then Artem came by and overtook us. We just didn't seem like we had the pace of the two Yonkers drivers, so I think that was a little bit of a struggle on our side with the car balance. But with that little mistake there, I ran wide at turn seven, where the car just understeered straight off the track. So it was a small mistake by me. I should have adjusted my driving skills and my driving to stop that car going off the track. But you know, I think that I'm pushing as hard as possible, and sometimes these mistakes are due to happen, and I just got to do a better job off that. And I'm still proud of what we were able to achieve, a third place during a race, but there's definitely more that I could have achieved out of that race from a driver point of view.
Yeah, and two podiums on that first weekend is really good. Not to mention either, you have such a great owner in Peter Dempsey, who it seems like every step that he went up the road to Indy Ladder, he had success in. Also, you have a good teammate, I should say, in Antoine Como, who comes from Radical Cup. So you're surrounded by some really great people in this young organization.
Yeah, I'm surrounded by a bunch of great staffs around me that obviously are wanting to win, and it just makes me want to push further. And I think Peter is a great person to show what the Road to Indy really is about, with his history, obviously, in the Indy, the Freedom 100, sorry, where he won by, I don't even know, a photo finish line, that let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And with Antoine, he helps me push me even more to try and help him, help the car, help the team, push to try and get a 1-2 finish all the time every weekend with such a great team. I think that that we're able to do that, and it's just a matter of time before it happens.
Well, let's talk about going into Turn 3 Motorsport. What was it like when you got that call from Peter, and how quick was it to just say, yeah, I'll run for you guys?
So it kind of happened because of that COVID-19, the coronavirus, that we weren't able to compete in the lights this year. So we had to try and find sources that we were able to compete and that would be best for myself and the other party. So I think that when we came to approach Turn 3, we kind of made a good deal with them regarding the how the year was going to go by. And with that being said, we also had a small contract of leasing their F3 car, so we were also able to compete in the FRA series. So I think that was kind of how it managed to work out as the season went by. So with Turn 3 and Andretti being by my side, I think that I'm with two amazing teams, and I'm really excited of how the season's going to go by, especially that now we're points leader for Indy Pro 2000.
Daniel Frost joins us on Inside Open Wheel. Just your third year on the road to Indy. You started back in 18, decided to dip your toe in the water in USF 2000, did seven races. Last year, you were fifth in Indy Pro 2000. So a lot of these tracks you have the history at. So how much now are you going to – we've got two races at Mid-Ohio, two weekends, I should say, coming up in Mid-Ohio. So how many of those are you going to sit back and just, you know, okay, well, this is how I did this here, and translate that into practice – and, you know, not only help the team out, but, you know, build upon what they know of from, you know, not just from Radical Cup, but from the tests that happened a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of tests in Mid-Ohio, and I think that track is the most important out of the whole year, with it having six races throughout this year. And I think our pace there was quite good. Especially showing that the open test we were P1 for pretty much the whole day. So I think that's a really good sign of how we're going to be performing for the rest of the for this coming Mid-Ohio weekend. And with that being said, I think Turn 3 has done a lot of testing prior to this, so they've got a pretty good car hooked up on around this track, and with the amount of testing they've done in the Radicals previously, they show that they've got a good understanding of how the track's going to be running, and I'm just excited to be able to be part of this team and show our true potential for this coming weekend.
And it's going to be five races there. You've got a triple header one weekend, a double header the next weekend. So how much of your time are you going to spend there in Central Ohio? Are you just going to stay there Monday through Friday in between race weekends, or are you going to get away and kind of decompress from the weekend and, you know, work out and get back at it?
I think that we're probably going to be staying there for the two weeks that is happening, because I don't see that it's a logical reason to come back and have a little break, because with such a short time, I just want to stay in the zone and focus on what I have to do. And if I were to do like this workouts and stuff like that, I'd probably do it down by the hotel, do some body weight workouts and stuff like that. But I'm probably going to be staying there for the 2 weeks and just be ready for whatever's to come.
I will say I spent some time there going to different rate, you know, different with different sanction bodies. So what's nice is there's plenty of hills there. So if you decide, you know, go for a run or, you know, rent a bike, you've got plenty of resistance there too. Start back in 2015 in Malaysia. That's where you started your karting season. You started later than what most kids who you race with started, as you were playing soccer for 6 years and you had dreams of becoming a goalie. When did racing come into your life and you said, I'd rather get behind the wheel of a car and go fast?
Yeah, so I think in my childhood, I always dreamt of being a professional soccer player, coming to the FPL or BPL or one of those to try and be a star there. And I was trying to be the best, working as hard as possible, but it just never seemed to be the right move. And I did some go-karting in Thailand for my very first time, and I found that the more interesting and passionate reason of why of a sport that I'd want to do. So coming to Malaysia in 2015, that was my first year, and I think that even though the results were there for my very first year, it was still one heck of an experience for myself, and the understanding and foundation of what I've gained over that year was just immaculate and amazing, that I'd want to do it, you know, even more. And then I told my parents that I want to pursue this dream and try to become an IndyCar driver. So we decided to move over to the States, and we did the seven races in 2017 to see how it was going to turn out. And I think that it's so far looking good. And I think that even the other drivers, having 8-9 years of experience compared to myself and coming to my sixth year, I'm still a little bit inexperienced. But I definitely do think that with more hard work, it would count over the years of driving. So I just got to keep pushing myself and to try and be the very best version of me, and to push to try and make it to the very top step of the American series racing IndyCar.
Yeah, it's tough to get into IndyCar racing. I know a lot of guys who've tried and, you know, haven't made it because whatever cost, or, you know, they felt like, okay, I'm good at Indy Pro. So, and I think you going back and forth between Indy Pro 2000 and FR America's, it's great for you because you get more seat time with, you know, two different cars. We'll touch on FR America's real quick, because I want to ask you a preview about VIR. But one thing I found interesting while doing some research on you is you own your own clothing line as well.
Yeah, I do. So I think back in 2018, I decided to start my own little brand to sell some clothes and stuff, so I can try and make some money to be able to fight back and have a little bit better budget for my racing. And I'm trying to work out on making my clothing brand side a bigger expanded brand for myself and to try and make a bigger name for myself, if that makes sense, to sell more of my clothing brand so my name would be more out there.
Right.
And I like the fashion industry as well. So I mean, it's a perfect way for myself to push on and try to make a name for myself.
Yeah, no, it's a great idea. Where if someone wants to find your clothes, where can they find them?
It's as simple as going onto my website and it'll be right there.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, Scott Dixon isn't the only hottest driver in the open wheel ranks. If you've been following Formula 1600, you will know that this driver has won 4 out of the first 6 races this season. Came second in the second Mid-Ohio race. He is Simon Sykes of Rice Race Prep. Simon, great to have you on board with us this week. How you doing?
Great to be here. I'm doing well. Just coming off the back of the Mid-Ohio weekend. Really enjoyed it there.
Yeah, and you're gonna be heading to VIR this week. We'll talk about that in a second, but I want to talk about your first 2 race weekends. I can't think of a driver that's been hotter than you right now in open wheel racing here in America. You swept the weekend at Pittsburgh. You won the first race at Mid-Ohio. Finished on the podium in the second race. It's a great start to the season for you.
It really has all come together perfectly, to be honest. I really didn't expect the start of the season that I had, but I'm thrilled to start it that way and looking to continue it. The first 2 weekends were some of my best weekends in racing, for sure. Coming off that triple win at Pittsburgh into Mid-Ohio, where I got the first win, a second in the second race, and unfortunately had a mechanical DNF before I got to start the third race. But even despite all that, I think I'm still in the points lead without drops. So it's definitely been a good start.
No, that really helps, especially with the drops. I've got to ask you, I know that the schedule at Mid-Ohio changed to where you had to run 3 races on Sunday. How difficult was that for you physically to run the first race, schedule to run the last race of the day, and you also had that race in the middle?
It was definitely something I wasn't expecting. Mid-Ohio, it's a physical track, and it had been a very hot weekend. So fatigue certainly played into it in the early stages of the weekend, and hearing that we were going to be running 3 races on Sunday was certainly a shock. But it ended up working out pretty nicely, because the first 2 races weren't all that hot, because we ran at 8:30 in the morning and then 11. And so by the time we got to the last race, that was the only one that was going to be in the 90-degree heat. But I didn't even get to start that race. So I have a little bit of a different perspective than everyone else that ran that day. I found it really entertaining to do 3 in one day. I enjoyed that.
Well, and of course, also in preparation for this truncated season, you've also run a lot of sim races. I've noticed your name come up in some of those sim races. Let's go ahead and talk about that, because you've been, I saw, F4 and all sorts of neat little events that have been going on through the extended off season.
That was something where I really enjoyed my off season. Despite all the world events happening, it seemed to benefit me in a small way, as I was able to compete in some really, really cool sim racing events. Part of the F4 and the F3 America Series. I competed in the Formula Drivers Challenge featuring the FIA Formula drivers from around the world, including FIA Formula 3. And then I also got to compete in the Elite Racing League, where we had full fields of IndyCar drivers for weeks in a row. And I ended up collecting 1 win at Iowa in that series against the full field of IndyCar drivers. So I had a really, really interesting time on there. And some of the names were just astounding to compete against, some guys that I've been watching since I was a child, and finally competing against them, whether it be sim racing or real life, is truly a really neat experience. Kyle Busch comes to mind. We ended up bump drafting with Kyle Busch at 250 miles an hour at Daytona in IndyCars. That was definitely one of the coolest moments I've had, on track or off.
I was going to say, I know some of my friends who are actually in that league as well, and it was really interesting to see a diverse mix of drivers and tracks we don't normally see on the IndyCar schedule, because obviously, A, they're too dangerous. You don't want to race at Daytona in an IndyCar, so it's kind of neat to get that exposure, not only in a sim racing league, but to race with guys that you, drivers that you idolized.
Yeah, it was truly an eye-opening experience. The other day I found some like baseball type cards, but they're for IndyCar that I had since the early 2000s, featuring Scott Dixon, Elio Castroneves. And I was looking back at them thinking, wow, I'm actually getting a chance to race these guys now. This is really happening. It was a really cool experience.
I was going to say, I actually have that set too. It was given to me by a coworker when I used to work at the racetrack all the time. Yeah, it's really neat too, those same drivers are still racing, whether it's an IMSA or IndyCar, but that whole Elite Series, I think, was just fantastic. I hope they continue it in the off season as well.
Yeah, I was looking at running. They are still doing that. They came out with a Road to Indianapolis series where they're using the new USF 2000 car in iRacing. And unfortunately, I couldn't make some of those events because my real life schedule kicked back up. But it really has been a great year so far. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. My team Rice Race has been great in the real season, and off season and sim racing, I've thoroughly enjoyed, and I think I've learned a lot and grown as a driver during it.
Simon Sykes joins us here on Inside Open Wheel. One last thing on sim racing, and we've asked some of the drivers who've been on here, everyone from Scott McLaughlin and now to yourself. What kind of setup do you have for sim racing?
So I'm not one of the ones with a super fancy setup. In fact, I just started upgrading it during the whole quarantine period. But I have a Logitech G29 steering wheel. And up until 2 months ago, I was using the G29 pedals as well. But I went ahead and upgraded to the Fanatec V3 pedals with the brake performance kit. Running off a single monitor, it's nothing crazy, but you really don't need multi-thousand-dollar setup to get the job done. If you look at what Connor Daly had been running with, you can do it with some of the consumer-grade equipment. And I haven't put all that much money into it, but it's worked beautifully.
I said Connor's one of them. Sebastian Bourdais also comes to mind. He had the same seat that Connor has with the IKEA chair. And I'll say this, working in that for hours on end, it gets the job done for comfort. So that's always a good thing. All right, let's talk about where you came from, starting off with karting. How did you get interested in wanting to run to where you're at today?
So this is a funny story. Racing's been a part of my life since I was born, essentially. I grew up in the heyday of NASCAR when it was at its peak, and so in the first few years of my life, my family, we would watch NASCAR every Sunday. And so growing up 1-2 years old, I was exposed to a bunch of it. And by the time I was 3, I told my parents that I wanted to be a race car driver. They thought it was cute, and they said that when I was old enough, I could start racing cars. My dad thought that I would probably need to be around 16 before I could get in a car and really go racing. But in the next year, I found a book at the library that said that kids could start racing go-karts at the age of 5.
Oops.
And my dad, he held true to his deal, and he got me a go-kart for my 5th birthday, and I started racing there.
Okay, so you go ahead.
Started in go-karts, kid karts at the age of 5. Won locally, had some success there, so we started branching out, running regionals. I won the Florida Karting Championship Series and started running nationals. And I found some success. I finished second in the Micromax Challenge in 2008, I think, followed by a few national wins in USPKS, WKA. I ran all those series. I mainly finished normally inside the top 5, but I wouldn't say I was the strongest go-kart competitor ever. We were small little team, my dad and I, competing with our own cart against some pretty big teams with tractor trailers coming to each event. So I was proud of the success we had at that level. And so I continued until I was about 14 when I started to make the transition into cars. And my story, it's kind of a wild ride there for a few years of where I went and what I did. I went to the Skip Barber Racing School, completed their 3-day, 2-day, and then I raced the 2016, I think it was the 2016 Championship Series, was my first real season in cars. And it drew in some serious competitors. Kyle Masson comes to mind. He won the 24 Hours of Daytona the following year. So at 15, in my first taste of cars, I really did have some stiff competition. I finished third in that series, won Rookie of the Year, and then competed in the following Winter Series, the 2017 Skip Barber Winter Series, and won the championship there. But that was the last event that Skip Barber did before they went bankrupt. And so I kind of hit a wall there for a minute. I was nominated for the Team USA scholarship that year. But unfortunately I wasn't selected. I was having a hard time getting back into a car after Skip Barber, fell through. So it was an unfortunate sequence of events there, but I found myself in the Rice Race F1600 car later that season. For my first drive in an F1600 car, and I had a decent weekend there, and that was in 2017. And the following season, I raced F2000 in the F2000 Championship Series, which proved to be a tough season. I started off with a win in the first weekend in the rain, but we had some car issues throughout the year, and it was a tough year without much success. I was nominated for Team USA again, but not having the results to stand out, I wasn't able to go to the shootout or be picked to go to England. And that's when I really had to take a step back and look at racing from a different perspective. And I took a break for my senior year of high school. I did two events last year. That was my senior year in 2019. Two of the F1600 events where I had success in each, and the latter was the Pittsburgh FRP series with Josh Green and Jonathan Kotick were the two big competitors at that time, and I was able to come out of that weekend with two wins. So I had a successful weekend there. I knew I could do it, but I really just needed to put everything together. And that's kind of when I signed with Rice Race for the 2020 season, knowing I had worked on this car for a while now, developing it with Greg, and we had a really good team to field a car for the championship. And that brings us to where we are today with a really, really strong car and team to go chase that championship.
I know Jackson Lee, your teammate, took a race 3 win. How tight is the camaraderie within Rice Race Prep?
I would say it's probably the tightest of any team out there. I think we have a really tight-knit team. It's very much like a family. We take care of each other on track and off. Jackson and I are good friends, as well as Kyle August, who was in the third car that weekend. We're all really good friends, and we had what we called the meme team for the iRacing series, where we had a really good time with it. Making jokes and laughing and really just enjoying the time we had. So now that we're back to real life racing, we're a tight knit team that's headed for success, I think.
Another race that you had success at this year was the WeatherTech Chicago Region, not CCA June Sprints race. One of my favorite races of all time. You finished second on Saturday. Sunday, you took the race win. That's got to be special, knowing that you won essentially a very historic race as well.
It absolutely was. I was really privileged to be in the position that I was to go for that win. It was the kickstarter to my season. That was my first day back in a real race car since last November. So it kicked off with some close competition and some good racing. Bob Perona got me by, I think the margin was 13,000ths of a second on in the Saturday race, right at the line. If you haven't seen the video, you can check out the last lap on my teammate's Jackson Lee's racing page on Facebook. He has a video of the whole last lap of that race, and it's worth the look because we were side by side for most of the lap, including three wide at some points. So a really good battle there. Bob Perrone raced really well to take that win. And then the Sunday race, I was focused on trying to get in the lead, stay in the lead. And fortunately, we caught some Formula V traffic in the middle of the race. And I made some interesting passes to get by those Formula Vs, but it ended up creating a gap between myself and Bob and Jackson, who were P2 and P3. So I was able to break the draft for a little bit and run it to the end of the race. They were chasing me back down, but the gap was just enough for me to get the win there at the end. So as a historic race, that was a really neat one to compete in and to take the win and kind of solidify myself as a real driver with the possibility to go farther.
So wait a second. You said the middle of the race didn't take you to the first or second lap to catch a Formula V? I mean, come on. No, I'm just kidding.
It was interesting with the V traffic. They're very competitive, and they had a very good race going on with probably seven cars battling for the lead of that race. So they were quick, but the speed difference made it probably, I think it was six laps before we caught them and really had to start going through V traffic.
All right, so pack schedule the rest of the year. We're coming up on VIR this weekend, and it's going to be great because you're going to have all the, 1600, you're going to have Atlantics and all them all together with F4, FR America. So it's going to be basically an open wheel festival this weekend.
I'm really looking forward to it. That's looking at the schedule. It's going to be a hectic weekend, but I think it's going to be great for open wheel with all these series coming together and competing at the same time. I'm excited to see all the action. It'll be nice for me as a driver to be able to sit back and watch some other racing as well. The F4 and F3, I'm looking forward to watching those and seeing who does well there, but obviously going to be focused on my weekend and trying to make the most of it, see if we can't get some more wins that weekend.
All right, now what do you have planned for the future? What are you looking for to move up? Obviously you've raced 2000, so you know what those are like, but what's the end goal for you?
The end goal, I think, it is IndyCar. That's something I've grown up looking at. I've really come to respect those drivers and the series. I think it's a great environment for open wheel racing and at the top level, and I'd like to get there. So I'm looking and trying to make a USF 2000 ride happen for next year. That would be the goal, is to go through the road to Indy, eventually to IndyCar. See what we can do there, but I would say IndyCar. IndyCar is the end goal, with possibly IMSA and some GT drives. That would be nice as well on the side. I'd always look to compete there. A top level ride in IMSA would be a great option as well. I'd be thrilled to compete in that series. So either of the two, those are my end goals, I'd say.
All right, Simon, where can people follow the rest of the season for you?
All right, Facebook at Simon Sykes Racing. That's my Facebook. I'll be keeping updates on there, letting everyone know how the weekends go. My Twitter is at Simon Sykes, SimonSikes. And Instagram, Simon period Sykes. I think those should cover it for the social media handles. I'll try and keep those as updated as possible and let everyone know how it's going. I'll post some race recaps, and I'll put a link on Facebook. You can, I've got an email list where I write a thorough recap of each weekend, detailing how each event went. That's a little more than the surface level post that I'll do on Facebook.
And obviously you wouldn't be here without some fine sponsors, getting you to where they're at. Who are they, so we can help support them?
Well, I first, before everything, my team, Rice Race, have been absolutely excellent to me, providing me with the top equipment and helping me get into the position that I am. Greg Rice and his team are amazing at what they do. And for anyone looking at F1600 as a series to run, Rice Race is the team, hands down. They've done an awesome job. As far as personal sponsors, I actually have a karting company called Group 6 Gear, where I sell protective apparel for karting, such as chest and rib protectors that are custom mold. So you put them on and they'll mold to your body, mold to the seat, and provide a superior fit. So I'm working on developing that company. You can find me at group6gear.com. I'm going to try and hit up some karting events this year, see if I can promote the product. So that's my big sponsor. Obviously, I can't thank my parents enough. Really wouldn't be here without them. They've been so incredibly supportive of everything I do. Truly appreciative of that. I'm looking to find some more sponsors for next year. See if I can't put together a USF 2000 ride.
Oh, come on. USF 2000's cheap. Didn't you know that?
Oh, yeah. It's the cheapest series out there.
Exactly.
But it is a very good series, very competitive, and it's where I want to be next year.
Well, fantastic, Simon. Thanks for joining us on Inside Open Wheel, and we'll definitely keep tabs on your future, and good luck at VIR this weekend.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Well, coming up next, Charlie and I will preview the weekend at VIR and the weekend at Iowa here on Inside Open Wheel. The wait is over. Inside Open Wheel is now on Apple Podcasts. So no matter where you get your favorite podcast from, you can always get a new episode of Inside Open Wheel on that same program. Heck, you can even get a push notification right when we release new episodes. Once again, Inside Open Wheel, we're now on Apple Podcasts.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Don't forget to follow us on Apple Podcasts. We're there now. We're also on Google Podcasts, Spotify, almost everywhere you get your favorite podcast at. All right, so it is time for the recap that we've all been waiting for and the preview we've all been waiting for. Driver analyst Charlie Ante joins us. And I've got to say this, Charlie. I touched on this with Daniel Frost. I cannot remember, let alone a season opener, but any race, we're talking Road to Indy, the Champ Car Support Series, the Kart Support Series, having a double header on a race weekend on the same day.
No, I mean, it's a common thing for us in the F1600 series.
Right.
But yeah, at this level, I think you're right.
You know, I had to think back to, yeah, I mean, it's common for you now in 1600 because, you know, you got the triple header weekends. And you know, I think, did you guys do that in Skippy as well?
I don't think so. I think we had double header weekends.
Okay, so double headers. All right. So,
yeah, so we would have like qualifying and a race on Saturday and then one race on Sunday.
Okay.
But that was, I mean, I didn't race in the nationals then, I was in the regionals.
Okay.
So I would put that even a step below F1600.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, all right. So let's go ahead and talk about what happened during the Road to Indy weekend. And of course, a lot of these races were near the afternoon part of the day. You know, there were a couple that were before lunch. But nonetheless, practice and qualifying took place on Thursday in USF 2000. Race one, Christian Rasmussen, Eduardo Barrichello second. Josh Green sits in third. The podium for race two was Rasmussen, D'Orlando, and Josh Green. Just remembered that we will have Christian Rasmussen on Inside Open Wheel next week, so we'll get to talk to him about his solid start in USF 2000. The Danish driver winning both races, and really to do that in one day is quite astounding.
What is his background? Because I know he's been around for a little bit, but for some reason in my mind, I have him as an Indy Lights driver, but he's Has he been up there? Or is no?
Let's check here on the...
Because I guess what I'm figuring is if he's been in Indy Lights, then why is he going all the way down to F2000?
That's a good question. Let's find out. He has a
I could be wrong.
He has a J. Howard development driver. He was a rookie last year in USF 2000. He was in the F4 championship in 2018. Finished third there. Finished third in the 2017 F4 Danish championship. You might be thinking of somebody else.
I probably am, yeah.
I mean, that happens. I mean, he was born in... He's going to be 20 years old here. Oh, he was turned 20 in June, I should say. You know, they've been lighting off fireworks over by me. And even yesterday, last night, you know, I'm sitting there on the love seat, and I hear... Boom! At 5 o'clock in the evening, it's like it's still light out. People, come on.
Yeah, I don't know. I should probably pay more attention to this stuff if I'm going to be going on podcasts and talking about it.
You know, never mind. If you don't have anything to say, don't say anything at all. Race one. I'll tell you this: Daniel Frost was the winner in Indy Pro 2000. Devlin DeFrancesco got pipped at the line, as you heard. Daniel Frost really made some headway in that final lap. And a driver that I know, I've watched him. Actually, he started off racing his dad's spec racer Ford. Colin Kaminsky finished third for Pabst Racing. Excited to see Colin do well. Race two at Road America, Artem Petrov, Stingray Rob, and Daniel Frost round out the podium there. So really, I talked with Daniels, you heard earlier. And yeah, it's just interesting. I know they got to get the season started. I know the IndyCar has different, you know, protocols and how to get, you know, people in and out. But it's quite interesting to see two races in one day. This next race for Road to Indy will be a triple header in a couple weeks at Mid-Ohio. So it's going to be a busy stretch here as we try and get play catch up for the season.
Yeah, I mean, NASCAR had a, I don't know if they've changed it or not, but they had a while where they were just going straight into the race, no practice, no qualifying.
Oh, I like that.
Everybody's schedule is sort of turned on its head, both in terms of like the calendar and the sort of day-to-day schedule. But I kind of want to talk about the Pro 2000 race for a second.
Okay, go ahead.
Because I do have an interest in it. So Daniel Frost, he drives the car for Turn 3 Motorsports. And I actually own that car.
That's right, you do. I forgot about that.
Yep.
Again.
Sorry, go ahead.
I should know this stuff if I'm going to be sitting talking on podcasts.
Touche. But yeah, so I bought it a while ago, and I lease it to, you know, I lease it to Turn 3 right now, and hopefully for a while in the future. And then I actually use the money that I make from that to pay for my own racing.
Yeah, how's that going, by the way?
Pretty good. I kind of, the team that ran it last year kind of left me out on a limb with the condition it was in when they gave it back. But, I've recovered from that. And the fact that I'm not racing this year is kind of helping, offset, you know, the money that I'm making now is kind of offsetting the cost of what I had to put into it to get it up to Turn 3's, specifications, or standards. But other than that, it's going well. I mean, it won. It's first race, and I was watching the race on Timing and Scoring, because I don't think it was on YouTube, or at least I couldn't find it. But you could tell from Timing and Scoring that it was like a really exciting race, because I know that he started last. So when I loaded up the screen, it was already like a lap into it, and he was already up to fourth place or sixth place or something like that. So he went from 16th to fourth in like one or two laps. And then you could watch the gap and the pace and all the numbers on the table, and you could tell as the race was going, like, oh, he's 3 seconds behind the leader. There's two laps left, and he's gaining at 7/10 a lap. Like, it's just on the edge of whether or not he's gonna to make it. So, and then you see it. Like, I remember I saw the thing updated to be the checkered flag, but it didn't update the board, so I thought he finished second. I was like, oh, you know, it was a great, didn't quite get the win, but it was a great race anyways.
Yeah.
And then it updated the whole thing. And I was like, oh, he won by, what, 5/100ths of a second?
Mm-hmm.
Or 50/100ths of a second?
It's one of the closest races in IndyCar sanctioning history. You know, you can listen to it online on the Road to Indy website or the Road to Indy app. And I think that Rob Howden should pay me for plugging that a little bit.
I guess I was looking for it on you. I was focused on finding a live stream rather than an audio stream.
Well, the problem is, and Rob mentioned, I forgot where he mentioned it, but he said that, so IMS Productions, which runs the feed, they were actually setting up on Friday because, you know, they're only there for a 2-day show. And they couldn't get the they were working on the television cameras when the race was going on. But here's the interesting fact, too. Road America has a bunch of really neat cameras at each corner that I've even called races from. There probably was a way to get it. I'm not sure how, but, you know, who knows? You know, maybe in the future, Anderson Promotions and Road America can work something out to where if they can't get the cameras from IMS Productions, they could probably be able to use the track cameras. But, you know, sometimes you might, it's strange. So mm-hmm.
I know that that operating even the IndyCar, the IMS cameras, operating them is absurdly expensive.
I know when I worked with the production company that actually now does the SRO America stuff, it's, I think, $10,000 for a weekend. That was just for them to do the NASA championships when I did it back in 2011, 2012.
Yeah, I've heard that for the IndyCar stuff, it's, I don't know if it was $10,000 a day or $10,000 an hour, but it was like, it was one of those two.
It's not cheap. I'll say that because, I mean,
it's incredibly expensive.
It really is. But, you know, I know why. Would you rather have a good product or a crap product? I'd rather pay for a good product. I think the people at IMS Productions, never mind that I've done some work with them too. I think they do a bang up job of getting pictures out on a race weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think last year when they've been broadcasting on YouTube, mm-hmm. You can sort of tell like the production quality isn't like there's no graphics on the screen and the cameras don't move. But they still get the pictures out, and you can follow their race. So they do pretty good with what they have.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, I know for the Road to Indy series, you know, they don't have the cameraman manning the stations unless it's mm-hmm. somebody in the truck, you know, pushing a button. Oh, so.
Yeah. But they could still have the graphics, I think. But I don't really know much about how that stuff works.
I know they have the graphics, and I've got to think back. Is this, you know, I think they have the upper on the upper third. They have the running order. I know they have it at the track. I can't remember if they have it on YouTube, but
I don't know. And to continue off on that tangent, just really quickly, the like top bar scrolling thing needs to be thrown in the garbage and like in put in the past.
Are you talking about the stuff that's been there since 2009?
I think it's been longer than that even.
You might be right.
But I mean the thing that, you know, IndyCar does it and NASCAR, everybody does it now is where they have the vertical column on the left side of the screen.
Yeah.
Like screens are big enough and the resolution is good enough that you can have a smaller image on your broadcast. It's easier to read. You don't have to stare at it for, you know, 20 seconds until the driver you're looking for comes across. It's just all right there. So that's my quick 20-second rant on the on-screen graphics.
All right, Charlie's rant. Good enough for me. Let's talk about the Rev Group Grand Prix 2 races. And, man, I will say this. I love Road America. It's my favorite mm-hmm. facility. I really wanted to be there. I really did. But some of the pictures I was seeing, I'm kind of glad I didn't go, you know?
Yeah, I mean, what else is there to say about this?
Yeah, like, there's a horse. There's a horse that's dead. Let's not use the baseball bat. We've used it enough on that. So let's move on. Joseph Newgarden qualified on the pole. Jack Harvey with another great run. I've got to say this. The best thing that Michael Shank could have done is paired up with Andretti Autosport. The man is one of the smartest people in motorsports.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that was your front row. Newgarden was really dominating up until a pit stop went awry. He dropped it, stalled it. They tried to get the starter on, started it, stalled again. And I even said on Twitter that, you know what, give him a chance. And this is before Jack Harvey's magnificent run ended in turn three. Sounded like there was a mechanical. He went off. And here's an interesting stat, Charlie. I was thinking about this when I heard that it went yellow. So the previous two races at Road America, the 2018 Kohler Grand Prix and the 2019 Rev Group Grand Prix, went caution free. So I pulled some numbers. Used multiple sources for this. I forgot what I use. I've got to go back and take a look. So bear with me as we try and stall a little bit. But the time between yellows, 1,113 days. Okay, that's from the 2017 Kohler Grand Prix to the Rev Group Grand Prix race one. It was 3 years.
So this is of races at Road America.
This is at races of Road America, correct. So that means that there were 3 years and 17 days between the last yellow at Road America and the first yellow at Road America. They raced 155 green flag laps until Jack Harvey's car decided to go off in turn three.
Wow.
Think about that for a second. That, you know, they could have gone that long. I mean, how many times when we were watching kart races there, was there a yellow flag?
Mm-hmm.
A lot. I'm very glad that this happened. By the way, I've got to thank racing-reference.info for having the stats so I could get these numbers. Okay. The time between the first caution, that first caution day, and the second caution, it was only seven turns. That's when Pat O'Ward and Connor Daly came together in turn seven. Connor Daly made some hard contact into the driver's left wall. And the only thing he had was a sprained shoulder. Obviously, that'll come into play a little bit later on. And I may be told that I'm poking the bear, but it's kind of interesting. So they clean up that crash. The good news is it took them longer to get the next yellow. Bad news is it was at turn 14 when Dalton Kella took his number 14 off in turn number 14. So cautions breed cautions, but I think it made for a little bit more of an interesting race there, which, as we know, is probably a good thing.
Mm-hmm. You know what I think would be kind of interesting is to, because, I mean, caution flags are far more common in IndyCar than they are in Formula One. I wonder what... if you could find a comparable stat, because that's kind of a strange statistic of yellows at a single race. But if there's a way to compare that to Formula One, like what is the longest number of laps without a caution flag in Formula One?
You're talking about
without a safety car.
I'll have to think about that. That's a good point. We'll have to look into that. I think that's a good off-season project, to say the least, because, I mean, this season's just going to be... we're not going to have time for much this season for that. Mm-hmm. So after that yellow, Dixon decided to be like the proverbial rabbit and run away with the lead. Scott Dixon, your winner, Will Power second. Alex Palou taking the Dale Coyne Racing with Team Go Car to third place. It's his first podium. I'll say this. I didn't expect Palou to get his first podium this soon because... I thought, okay, give him a couple races, maybe get to a more technical track like a Mid-Ohio or Portland, and maybe we'll see him on the podium. But Road America, good on you, Alex. That's a heck of a race, especially coming from 14th.
Yeah, I should file this under. I should pay more attention to this stuff, but I don't even actually know who that is.
We'll have to get him on. Thankfully, I've got sources over there at Coyne Racing that can get me on. So we'll have to get him. We'll have to go in together on an interview, I think. So, address the top five. Ryan Hunter-Reay with a good fourth. Colton Herta once again proving that he's actually a chip off the old block. Finishes in fifth place. Second race. Oh, man, that was a mess and a half to start off with. Just coming to the green, Connor Daly ran into the back of, I forgot who it was, I'm sorry, ran into the back of the field. And Will Power decided he was going to come in like a wrecking ball, take out not only Ryan Hunter-Reay, but in turn one, but Connor, Graham Rahal in turn three. And I will say this, I'll give Will Power the benefit of the doubt in turn three. I don't know if I can give him the benefit of the doubt in turn one. I've got to take a look at in-car camera. I didn't see his in-car, but man, Will Power, just not a good start to the race for him.
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to see the race. I finally got to the TV and turned it on just enough to see the last, not even the last lap, but the last corner.
All right, we'll talk about So we'll just wrap this up real quick. Dixon had a pretty down day. He fell the same fate that Joseph Newgarden had in the pits with stalling, except he only stalled one, just had a hard time getting back up to the front. Alexander Rossi finally had a good day himself. I called it his quiet revenge. Sat in the bottom half of the top 10 most of the race, but near the end was able to salvage a good finish. Pat O'Ward and Felix Rosenquist, though, the second half of the race, it was all those two. O'Ward would come in early and gain a lap, but I'll tell you this, Rosenquist methodically would gain time up until O'Ward would go into the pits. Rosenquist would last a lap longer, but I have to say, I have to question this. Charlie, you know as well as I do how well fresh tires work at Road America, okay? Mm-hmm. The final pit stop, the Aero McLaren Schmidt Peterson, the Aero McLaren team, that's what I'm going to call it from now on, tacked on a set of scuff reds onto O'Ward. If you're going to do something like that, do it earlier on in the race after the first pit stop, or throw them on, you know, at the start of the race, because then you can, you know, run a short fill. That right there, I think, lost him the race, because near the end of the stint, that's when Rosenquist was really able to gain the advantage. And everybody's saying it's Connor Daly. I don't think it was Connor at all. I think that just the tires, the reds, as you know, fall off quicker than the blacks. I think that those used reds fell off way quicker than he or the Aero McLaren team ever thought it would. So Felix Rosenquist getting his first win. Pat O'Ward on the podium. Alexander Rossi third. Marcus Ericsson fourth. Colton Herta with another fifth place finish. So point standings real quick. Look like this. Dixon 173. Herta 119. O'Ward 110. Pagenaud with 110 as well. And Newgarden at 106. And we're going to take a quick break. We'll finish your thought, and then we'll come back to talk about the Iowa IndyCar 250s and the Andy Shrive Memorial VIR. This is Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
White flag is in the air. We're going to preview a couple of races that are going to happen this weekend, both at Iowa and Virginia. But, Charlie, let's finish a point we were talking about with the, you know, in terms of the Rev Group Grand Prix. And I've told you since day one when Felix Rosenquist came over to America, get him in an Indy car. He's going to be fast. He's going to be a race winner. We were a little hard on him at Texas, I'll admit.
Yeah, I think but I remember talking about him after Texas and saying that he was, you know, he's a little bit rough around the edges, but just, you know, keep him in the car for the season and give him some polish, and he's going to turn into a front runner and possibly, you know, another long-term career IndyCar driver that is just consistently at the front. And I think, you know, this weekend he showed that that's entirely possible. And I think getting his first win is, you know, going to be breaking the seal. And from then on, it's just, you know, off to the races, possibly.
I think you're right. I don't know. And here's the thing. I told my wife when I was sitting and watching him at Mid-Ohio, I'm like, you know what? He's going to be a threat next year at Mid-Ohio. I think he's really going to be a threat in Mid-Ohio. I think another driver who's going to be a threat in that team is going to be Marcus Ericsson. I can see Ericsson getting his first win of the season. Heck, I can even see, you know, the Coin Boys getting a win this season. It's going to be that wide open. You know, I mean, yeah, we saw Dixon go 3-for-3, but man, the Hondas are just running strong. Penske and the Chevys really need to do something. I mean, they're qualifying great, don't get me wrong, but what is up with their race strategy? I mean, it's there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. We'll see what happens the next couple races. And as we said, next two rounds are at Iowa Speedway. Charlie, you've done a sim around there. Talk to us about the bull ring there in Newton, Iowa.
Well, yeah, so I've never driven at Iowa in real life. The one oval that I did in Pro Mazda was Milwaukee. Unfortunately, we don't go there anymore.
Boo.
But I have done a bunch of sim racing in Iowa, which is just as good, being facetious, not really. But yeah, it's fast. It's really tight. and I don't really know what insight that I can provide other than that, but I guess that's pretty much any IndyCar on an oval.
Yeah, I've actually watched a race at Iowa, and I will say this: when they say it's fighter jets in a gymnasium, they mean it. It is such a fast, fun track. It's one of my favorite ovals to actually watch a race, and I've only been to a couple.
Yeah, I can believe it. It feels like it in the sim.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the one time I was there, it was one of the last. It was one of the last daytime races. Tell you how long ago it was. It was Joseph Newgarden, and I think it was 2016. So Joseph Newgarden won with a broken clavicle because he wrecked it Texas, and that was a Texas race where it ended up getting rain delay because of that tropical storm that went through and all that fun stuff. But
was he already at Penske at that point?
No, he was still at Ed Carpenter Racing, so it had to be the year before he went to Penske. And he flat out dominated. And I remember that there were rumblings of him going to Penske. And I'm like, this is going to be the race that he's going to probably the reason why he's at Penske. I wouldn't be surprised to see him go out and win because Iowa's his track. He was good there in Indy Lights. He's good there in IndyCar. I think this is what's going to kickstart Newgarden's championship defense this year. But I don't know if there's anything stopping Scott Dixon, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he's going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, you know, the whole team's going to be tough to beat because you've got Michael Cannon over there at Ganassi.
So speaking of Iowa, are they going to Richmond this year or no?
No, they are going to Richmond next year, which I think I'm going to try and get there myself.
Yeah, I might do that too if things have calmed down by then.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, I'd like to get the show on the road. By the way, if anybody wants to sponsor us so we can get these shows on the road next season, insideopenwheel@gmail.com, shameless plug. Also this weekend is the Andy Shriven Memorial at VIR. Here's a list of who's going to be there. All the Formula Race promotions, most of Formula Race promotions teams, the ones we follow, F1600, F2000, Atlantics, and F4 and FR Americas. We talked to Daniel Frost about it. A lot of people going to be there. You know this track very well, Charlie.
I do. Under normal circumstances, I would be there this weekend in the F1600 series. But, of course, we've decided not to participate for the time being. But VIR is really a shame that no major series go there, except for IMSA.
I was gonna say, are we back to the IMSA's a no major series anymore, or are we off that train again?
Yeah, I mean, I like IMSA a lot, how many people watch it or go there, for that race, like?
I will admit, the last ALMS race I was at was at VIR. Of course, I was working for a separate series, but we won't go into that. I can remember there were more people in the paddock than there were around the track watching the race.
Yeah, I mean, I consider IMSA. I mean, obviously there's teams like Penske. And there's factory support, but for the most part, I sort of consider it like a luxury SCCA, like a high brand upmarket SCCA.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
I'm
expecting NASCAR to email me after this too. If you're going to email complaints about that comment, NASCAR, it's charlieanti@insideopenwheel.com. So.
Yeah, I guess I can kiss goodbye my IMSA career. They're never going to give me a competition license again.
Oh, nope. Well, you know, they probably weren't going to give it back to you after you dumped it in Oaktree.
What did I? No, that wasn't Oaktree. That was at the top of the hill. That was two corners before it was.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, no, that wasn't my fault. I was just a normal, I just, you know, dropped two wheels off. It was the fault of the track having a huge clump of dirt hidden under the grass almost flipped my car over.
Again, VIR, if you have any complaints, charlieanti@insideopenwheel.com.
Just find a new groundskeeper.
Charlie, why don't you go to VIR and hire yourself as a groundskeeper?
I probably would make things worse, to be honest. It's easy to criticize.
It really, yeah.
And so, yeah.
Real quick, before we
reminds me of I was just watching The Simpsons, and Homer had a great quote. Or Marge said, "You know, it's easy to criticize," and Homer's like, "It's fun too."
Yes. That's why I sit behind. That's why I'm only sitting behind a microphone in my studio, and I'm not on a racetrack. Oh no, that's COVID's fault. Real quick, before we get further into the Andy Shriven Memorial VIR, I want to tell you that the races, the Iowa IndyCar 250s, Friday night and Saturday night, if you're watching on TV, NBCSN, if not, you can listen to our friends at IndyCar Radio on TuneIn, Sirius XM, or any of your local terrestrial stations. Back to VIR real quick. You know what? They need to make some upgrades, obviously, to the on-track facilities. Getting rid of Oak Tree was a huge one, though. That wasn't their fault.
Yeah, that was unfortunate.
That was unfortunate.
So when you say that, are you saying that it was good for, like, upgrading safety-wise? Or what do you mean by that exactly?
Tongue-in-cheek, I meant good for upgrading safety-wise. But
okay, I mean, that's true.
Yes.
You know, I actually have never even thought of it like that, but that is true. Of course, it's obviously unfortunate because that adds so much character to that corner.
Oh, it does. And, you know, I was there before and after. I never, unfortunately, got a chance to see Oak Tree in its position because I never got a chance to go out to Oak Tree. But anyway, back to what we were saying, they still need to make some, you know, big improvements to that facility because IndyCar is not going to let a huge open space from the S's all the way around the back straightaway just open in the infield because a car could just go off and hit a car coming down the back straightaway. And then, you know, we have a serious situation on our hands.
Yeah. I mean, the incident that we were talking about before where this was a Pro Mazda race back in 2007. I forget what corner it is, but it's the one after the S's. So right. You go through the S's, that's all flat out. And then there's a really fast left-hander where it's kind of blind going in. I think on the Pro Mazda, you kind of just brush the brakes, maybe go down a gear, and then just pitch the car into the corner. But you're sitting so low in the car that you can't see the exit of you can't see the right side of the track as you're exiting the corner. And so it was during practice. I was trying to set a good time, and I just dropped two wheels off, and got on the grass, and that sucked me off the rest of the track. And it looks like it's flat because it's all green, but there's undulations and stuff in the dirt. And so my car hit a ramp under the grass, and it almost flipped it over. It spun it around and I hit the driver's left side wall, and damaged the gearbox, the rear suspension, a whole bunch of other stuff.
Bunch of expensive parts.
Pretty nearly totaled the car, but not quite. So yeah, I mean, they would have to fix that stuff. I don't think there's any runoff that isn't grass. Like, there's no paved runoff. I don't think there's any gravel traps.
I'm trying to think if there was one, it'd be that left-hander off the hairpin. You know what I'm talking about there? You're going down the straightaway. You're going down the front stretch. You take that huge hairpin, and then there's that left-hander. If you went straight off, you'd be in the paddock.
Yeah, you might be right about that. Actually, I can look it up right now.
Yeah, I'm actually going to do the same because I'm kind of keen for interest. And this is what we do in a live podcast tape. And we actually we go to our handy dandy Google Maps and do stuff like this because we want to be factual.
Let's see.
There might be a couple of places where there are no gravel traps.
There's a tiny little gravel trap. If you go straight off at turn one,
right.
Like straight off, there's a tiny gravel trap right before the tire wall.
Okay, really?
Yeah, but it's like, it's really small. It almost looks like a kid's sandbox.
Okay, I see that. Yeah, I see it now. Okay, so that's the one. Where else is
it? I wouldn't even really consider that much of a gravel trap. Everywhere else on the track is just grass.
Yeah, so they need to get that. Well, also remember a couple years ago during the AMA Superbikes race, one of the racers lost his brakes after the checker took the checker and just went straight off and almost ended up in No, he didn't end up in North Carolina, but he also ended up in the Dan River there. So, you know, that's going to be a problem. Yeah, there's just a lot of places that need improvement. You know, not to mention they've got to, they're probably going to have to fix that chicane driver's left after the South Pits, because I cannot see the Indy cars going blind into that kink.
Oh, yeah, totally. They would probably have to add a new chicane.
They probably would. I mean, there's plenty of places.
Because even if they use that chicane that's there right now, they would get by the time they got up to the roller coaster, they would be carrying a pretty good, they would be going, you know, well over 100, probably well over 150, even with that chicane there.
But could you imagine an Indy car going down the roller coaster? Oh, my God. Oh, that would take some huge cojones. I would love to see that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, VIR, it's a nice, very beautiful facility.
It's
flowing.
Gorgeous, yeah.
Yeah. I'm very glad that they finally paved the whole North Paddock. That needed it desperately, but I need to get back out there. I just need an excuse. I tell you what, those villas there at the South Bend, I've stayed there before and it's really nice. But so a bunch of races this weekend at VIR, and I'm taking a look at the Formula Race Promotion schedule. Practice all day Friday. Races on Saturday start after lunch with Atlantic F2000, F1000. I know that F4 and FR Americas will be live streamed on their website. I don't know about Formula Race Promotions yet.
No, I don't think I've ever heard anything about them broadcasting other than live timing.
Well, we can thank COVID for that one. Yeah, that's all I'm going to say about that
If I were driving, I'm working with a friend who is, we're trying to get a live stream of my in-car video up. And that would have been a project that I would be working on this year. But obviously, we're not running, so we're not doing that. But
yeah,
that is something that's hopefully coming in the future.
Yeah, there are some. Let me put it to you this way: there are some things that will be coming down the pipeline here. I would say in the next year or so that I think will be an improvement for those coming up through the ranks in Formula Cars. But nonetheless, it's going to be a busy weekend of races. Next week, as we mentioned, Christian Rasmussen's going to be joining us. Nick Yeoman's going to be coming off his doubleheaders with Road America and Iowa from the IndyCar Radio Network. We'll talk to him about that. And then we'll just go over everything in the world of racing. This is a great time. I remember when we started the show, I said, I can't wait for racing. I'm excited it's here because we get to talk about real-life racing. We get to talk to the real-life drivers. We have real-life results. It's nice. But again, we still have this pandemic in the forefront. And if you are listening, you are suffering from this. We hope that you're improving. We hope you're doing well. And we hope we're bringing some joy into your life. Charlie, thanks for joining us once again. And we'll chat with you here in a couple weeks and break down some more races and talk about racing and all that fun stuff.
All right. I'll make sure I pay more attention for next time.
Until next time, I'm Jeremy Scott. Charlie Ante joined. Just thanks for listening. New episodes drop Monday. Follow us on your favorite podcasting service. Take care.